So first thing I want to say and put out there is that every time we use antibiotics, we're potentially selecting for antibiotic resistance. So this is not necessarily a human versus animal or problem. The other thing that I think is real important to state, even though it may seem real obvious to some of you, it may not to others of you, is that people and animals don't become resistant to antibiotics. It's the bacteria that become resistant to antibiotics. And sometimes you use it shorthand of, I've got a resistance to antibiotics, and I get that. But conceptually, to keep in mind that we're not the ones, the animals are not the ones who become resistant to antibiotics. It is the bacteria that do or do not become resistant. Oh yeah, I got to do that presenter disclosure. It's not a simple problem. I guess if it was a real simple problem, we would have not had to have a session here today. And it may seem simple on some levels and not on others. And as we go through today, hopefully that'll become more obvious of what we mean by that. Somebody didn't turn theirs off. The World Health Organization has said that antibiotic resistance is one of the most significant challenges that face the modern public health. And the Dr. Chan from the World Health Organization is talking about what it's going to look like in a post-antibiotic world, which is different than a pre-antibiotic world, because now the bacteria are past the point of being able to come up with antibiotics that will work to treat them. FDA, CDC, USDA, the World Health Organization, the OIE, which is the World Animal Health Organization, FAO, have all said that there is a definitive link between the use of antibiotics in food animals and antibiotic resistance in human pathogens. And the European Union actually banned the use of antibiotics as growth promoters in 2006. How well that's been implemented has been a little bit different from country to country, but ultimately the ban on those antibiotics has really led to a reduction in the prevalence of antibiotic-resistant bacteria in animals, food products, and humans, so they really feel that they've justified their strategy. One of the things I want to point out to people is that antibiotics are different from a lot of other drugs, and they're what has been called societal drugs. And what do I mean by societal drug? I mean that if you have high blood pressure, and you take high blood pressure medication, it's going to affect you the same way every single time, and it's going to affect your children the same way every single time. And that goes back to the thing of that drug is affecting your body. That's different for antibiotics. So every time you use an antibiotic, it affects the entire community. And, I might not being too grandiose, it really does affect the entire world, and it affects how the antibiotics are going to be, whether they're going to be useful or not, the next time you need to use them, the next time your children may need to use them, the next time an animal needs to use them, the next time your neighbor needs to use them. So, one person's use can really diminish the effectiveness of another's use or another, whether you're talking about a human or a community. So how does it get from livestock to people? How do we, what is this cross connection? Well, antibiotics are used, and I'll talk about that in just a second, how they're used in food animals and livestock. But the bacteria themselves, sometimes the antibiotic themselves, and the genetic components of antibiotic resistance certainly go from the environment, whether it's from feedlots, gets into the soil, gets into the water, surface waters and ground waters, wild animal populations will pick it up. Because if you think about it, especially antibiotics that are given orally, most of that goes through the animal, either unchanged or the antibiotic-resistant bacteria go through the animal. And that manure, that waste, ends up someplace. And everybody is downstream from somebody else. They've found resistant bacteria in the air more than 160 yards from a feedlot. Insects, cockroaches, and flies fly. And they'll mechanically transport bacteria and antibiotic-resistant bacteria from place to place. Certainly in our food, meat, irrigated crops, if they've been irrigated with water that's contaminated with antibiotic-resistant bacteria, animal waste contaminated water, animal waste that's put onto to crops or put onto to land, either to get rid of the waste or as fertilizer, and both is, are used. There's certainly cross-contamination in kitchens. I just talked to some of the folks at the glow germs people down at the exhibit hall, and they have a very interesting demonstration of even people who try to be very, very good about not cross-contaminating their kitchens when they're preparing food are often surprised at how much cross-contamination happens, which shouldn't be too surprising. We get antibiotic resistant, or we get antibiotic, or we get bacterial infections in hospitals where that's their whole thing. Why would we think that our kitchens are going to be more sterile than a hospital? They're not going to be. Then there's certainly there's direct contact with livestock, livestock operators and their families. And that's just sort of looking at the very direct bacteria, enteric bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics. That doesn't even talk about the fact that we know that bacteria are very promiscuous and that they'll transmit their resistance from one type of bacteria to another. They'll just about, you know, pretty much across phylums, nearly. You know, we found there have been resistant bacteria that have been found that have been around for thousands of years, but they've been very quiescent. And it isn't until we start mucking around that we start seeing some of the, we start actually making some changes. So how are antibiotics used in animals? And you'll get a little bit more of this as we go along, but certainly they're used for therapeutic use. And when I say therapeutic use, I have a specific meaning, and that means to treat a sick animal or an animal that's been exposed to disease. And in human terms, the same, you know, sick animal you sort of get, or if you think about a pertussis outbreak, you may give antibiotics to those who are within an arm's distance of the person who's, you know, the, usually the kid who's had pertussis in the classroom. But it's a targeted use. It's very specific. It's for a specific set of animals for a specific disease. But then there's a lot of non-therapeutic use that, that goes on in raising animals in this country and throughout the world. And that includes giving them to healthy, non-exposed animals to get them to grow faster for feed efficiency. It absolutely works. And for what I call production diseases. And so, you know, we're sort of looking at giving antibiotics to animals to get them to grow faster or for a reason other than treating them for a disease process that they have. Becoming ill at a specific life stage just isn't a normal thing for an animal. So it's you know, they're often given at a specific life stage. Antibiotics, like I said, they're regularly given to healthy animals, and they're legally available over the counter. For human medicine, you need a prescription for the most part. To get in most of the antibiotics, you have to have a prescription from a healthcare provider. In animal care, you don't. Most of the antibiotics, not all of them, many of them, most of them are available without a veterinary prescription, without a prescription at all. Part of the reason is that is the history of how they got approved. They were approved back in the day, back in the 50s and 60s, and that was at a time where, like, every week there was a brand new antibiotic that was being developed. So if a bacteria became resistant, it was like, don't worry, we'll have another mycin next week. That pipeline is drying up. There's little veterinary oversight. There may be some sort of way at the top of the chain, but down at the farm level, there often isn't. Often the farmer or the rancher, the person who's raising the animals, will get a box every month and says, you know, if the pig is coughing 2 days, give them this. Or if the chickens are going off feed, give them this. But that's not the same thing as having a veterinarian looking at that those premises on a regular basis. There's not been use monitoring. We have a little bit on sales. I'll talk about that. But we really don't know how they're used, where they're used. We just sort of have these big totals. But every time we do give, we do have an inkling that they're given to a lot of animals. USDA has done some studies where they've looked at how many people or how many farms are using antibiotics and for what reason, and it seems to be a pretty common practice. Being able to quantify it more than that, I've not been able to find anything that, that gives a real good definitive this much antibiotic is used, where people have actually gone out and talked to individual farms. They've gotten some self-reports. There's a report that came out recently, but it's all self-report and then sort of math from a few people. But we don't have a lot of use data. But every time we use antibiotics, basically every animal we put them into, whether it's an animal, a non-human animal or a human, is each one of those entities becomes a little mixing vessel, a potential vessel for developing antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And if you're giving a low level of antibiotics, and many of the antibiotics that are given for these low uses or these non-therapeutic uses are given at a low level that are not designed to kill bacteria. But what does that do? Well, people have taken, how many of you have taken basic microbiology? Most of you. If you give a low dose, what you're doing is you're setting up a really great environment for developing antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So, like I said, we don't really know exactly how the antibiotics are used. We do have 2 years' worth of data. The 2011 data isn't out yet, but we do have some data out of how antibiotics are used or how much antibiotics are sold for human use and for food animal use that's available to us. And we certainly know that there are a lot more food animals than there are people in this country. There's about 9 billion animals that are raised every year. Lots of them get antibiotics. Every time that an animal or a human gets an antibiotic, there are potential reservoirs. So if you've got 9 billion reservoirs of potential antibiotic-resistant mixing vessels going on, makes me a little bit nervous. But we don't have too much more detail than this. We know total sales. We know total sales by class of drugs. So we can say how much macrolides, how much penicillins, how much tetracyclines have been sold. But I can't tell you by species. I can't tell you from the data how it's administered or the method it's administered, whether it's feed or water injection. I can't tell you whether it's for growth promotion or to treat disease or to control disease or to prevent disease. We don't have that data, not in this country. They do in some countries, but we don't know that. So for total amounts, one of the things that concerns me as a public health person, as an epidemiologist, is if you just look at total sales, I really can't get a good handle on what that means. So instead of thinking about it in terms of, think about 100 grams of tetracycline. If you give 100 grams of tetracycline to an animal to treat a disease, that's one mixing vessel and you're going to be doing one set of things. But if you're giving 1 gram of tetracycline to 100 animals, you're going to be doing different things, but now you've got 100 different animals that are potential reservoirs. We can't tell from this data what's going on here. So I think more data is, obviously it's always, more studies needed, more data needed, but truly in this case, I think that's true. So how can we reduce antibiotic use? Well, their federal agencies have had some policies. FDA and USDA have certainly come up with policies. USDA acknowledged in a 2009 report that the assumed economic and production benefits of antibiotics in animal feed can largely be achieved by improved cleanliness in animal housing, changes in testing and dealing with the results of testing, more vaccines, changes in diet. They also noted that antibiotics for feed efficiency is not cost effective for poultry. May be effective for baby pigs, but certainly is not for grower and finisher pigs, which are pigs just before they go to market. And we know that they're used in all of those circumstances. USDA has recently awarded a grant to look at the social attitudes of why antibiotics are used on farms and ranches. There are some legislative options that limit the use of antibiotics in animals. I'll talk about that in just a second. There are a few legal ramifications, but there are some legal issues that are going on. And then the marketplace, what is the market demand or not demand? So FDA policy, FDA has limited the use of cephalosporins and fluoroquinolones, which were not used, by the way, for food to get animals to grow faster. They were all both prescription drugs. But they limited that use at what they call extra-label drug use. They also came out with guidances, they call them Guidance 209 and 213. Guidance 209 just was finalized, and that basically says that growth promotion is not a judicious use and shouldn't be used, and that there should be more veterinary oversight of the antibiotics that are used in animal production. As far as legislation, there have been several attempts. There's the PAMTA, Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act, that's been introduced for the last couple of Congresses. Our understanding is that will be probably introduced in the next Congress. Nothing's going to happen in the rest of this Congress, in case any of you are thinking that it might happen. And it basically says that antibiotics that are used for human medicine should be only used to treat sick animals. Will there be other legislation in the next Congress, in the 113th Congress? Probably. Representative Waxman has been talking about what he's calling the Data Act, which is, I got to read this, delivering antibiotic transparency in animals, basically asking for more data. Producers have certainly, and you'll hear a lot more about this in a bit, I suspect, alternatives to non-therapeutic use, and that's being done in this country and lots of other countries. Husbandry changes, more vaccines, feed changes, other feed additives, giving different spacing to the animals, that kind of thing. And the industry has come up with some initiatives. There's nothing that's a regulation, but they have some initiatives. But who's checking the hen house, kind of, truly, who's checking the hen house is sort of hard to say, and what is considered judicious use by one industry may not be considered judicious by another. The consumers certainly can play a role, and we've certainly seen that in the Chicago Public School System have asked for chicken raised without antibiotics to be served to their children, and they've been able to do that in the schools with the school lunch program at a dollar a lunch. Will it make a difference? Well, the Danes, which is what DanMap is that they've seen decreases in antibiotic resistance in animals and meat bacteria. But, it really comes down to how much certainty do you need to regulate. From the public health perspective, how much do we need? And the other problem gets to be once we have resistance, how do you put that genie back in the bottle? Can we? Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. In public health, we tend to go with the precautionary principle. So when the evidence points towards the potential for an activity to really cause significant widespread or irreparable harm to humans or the environment, we give humans and the environment the benefit of the doubt, trying to come up with other ways to avoid harm. So the bottom line is that because overuse and misuse of antibiotics anywhere can pose a health threat to people everywhere, prudent use of antibiotics is crucial. It's imperative in all cases, whether we're talking about pets, farm animals, humans, we all have to be good stewards of our really precious use of antibiotics. Thanks. I think that's it.